This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow we'll talk about how technology and FCC rule changes have altered the sounds of local radio. Some say for the better, others disagree. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Do you take time to do nothing? Not just sleep, but concentrated chunks of leisure, letting your mind go to play checkers or stare at the sunset or twiddle your thumbs. We'd like to hear what your version of nothing is. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can email us, TOTN@npr.org, and not only what your version of nothing is, but why it is that we have such a hard time getting to it sometimes. In the new book, The Importance of Being Lazy, in Praise of Play, Leisure, and Vacations, author Al Jeaney says that most of us don't take enough time to do nothing. Al Jeaney joins us now from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Pleasure to be here.
Americans, you argue, are not very good at relaxing.
You know, we're not. This is part of our moral heritage. Now, we grew up, we came to found a city on the hill, our Puritan forefathers, and we have found that city. And the work ethic is perhaps our most predominant myth in the society. But it doesn't have to be the Protestant work ethic. It could be the blank work ethic, this belief that work makes us better. And it does. But in so doing, we forgot that as much as we love our jobs, as much as we need our jobs, as much as we want our jobs, we don't play well. And we don't know how to play. And in fact, I think Americans don't do nothing well.
Well, why is it necessary to do nothing?
Because I think even if you love your job, find fulfillment, and you have the best kind of a job, you think of it as a vocation more than even a career, we need to step away from work to better understand our work and our life. We need to remember, all the theories of creativity show this up, that creativity really occurs away from the moment, and so as to return to the moment. A wonderful Chinese saying is that the importance of traveling to exotic places is not to view the exotic place, but to get a better perspective on where we came from.
Yes, it's all in the journey. It's not in the getting there.
Absolutely.
Now, you make a point of saying leisure should not be just non-work time, because, you know, a lot of us, as you write in your book, seem to organize the trip to Disney World with, you know, all of the flexibility and fun-loving character of General Patton.
That's right. As my wife would point it, it's the blitzkrieg of approach to vacations. At 7:07, we will be up. At 7:09, we'll be on the road. And by 9 o'clock, we will be having fun.
Yes.
And so I think that, but I think that's part of our rushed life. Think of it, Neil. I just recently came upon this myself. Think of how time has changed in our lifetime. And I counted the time instruments in my house. There were 30. I stopped at 38, including, I think, a clock on the toaster, which is, of course, a very valuable tool in and of itself.
You notice that twice a year when you have to change it.
That's right. But there were three clocks when I was growing up in my house. The grandfather clock in the kitchen, my father's wristwatch, and the clock in my parents' bedroom to wake them up in the morning. My grandparents got up all on their own by some act of God at 4:30 every morning. So we've changed how we look at time, how we look at our art sense of time, and we think we're at leisure when we're not working, and that's just not true.
America is really the only country that could sell the time. I mean, you know, having worked at radio stations where,
right,
you know, the Campbell Soup time is.
Right, absolutely the case. And in fact, anybody's in communication arts right now, they don't want to be on air such as yourself. They want to be in management. In fact, they want the best job of all in radio world, that is selling time.
That's it, selling time. Or, you know, the other thing you wonder about, you know, the time here at WWWW is 3:15. As opposed to everywhere else on the planet.
Right, right. Absolutely the case.
Yes. Our number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@npr.org. We're talking to Al Jeaney, whose new book is The Importance of Being Lazy in Praise of Play, Leisure, and Vacations. What do you do when you do absolutely nothing? Give us a phone call, and let's hear from Todd, who joins us from Hillcrest in San Diego.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Okay.
Hey, you know, one of the things that I've been doing for the last 6 months is trying to live without a TV.
Ah.
And you really get to be comfortable with yourself, and you have some time where you just want to do nothing and just chill. One of the things I did, because, you know, reading has been one of the, I just haven't had enough time to do that of recent, is I started subscribing to a book service where I can download books from the internet. And it kind of ties in with your last subject, but I'm currently listening to Dreamcatcher, and it's just a great way that I can still get stuff done around the house, but I can be listening and really still partaking in so many great works of literature.
And stepping outside of reality for a few minutes.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, because everybody does need downtime, but I don't want to get wrapped up and just losing hours and hours in front of a TV, so this
no,
is a great way to...
I understand that, but you know, when C.K. Chesterton said, it's important to do no thing, the gentle art of doing no thing, he didn't mean literal lassitude, sit there forever and ever and ever. That's not possible unless you're my teenage son, and I'm hoping he's going to grow out of that. But in fact, he has grown out of that.
Yeah.
But I think in reality, what we're talking about is doing no thing connected to our work, to the tasks that we absolutely must do to survive. You know, I think that Beloit Brecht was right. First grub, then philosophy. We have to do the quotidian tasks, but it is only in finishing those tasks that leisure is possible and that the real task of being a human being begins.
Mm.
And the real task of being a human being, as opposed to what we do that at least 40 hours a week through
right.
commuting at 60.
Actually, 51 hours a week, but who's quibbling over a lousy 11 hours a week? And then there's commuting, and then there's chores, and there's kids, but let's not make too much of a deal of it. And that's the point. How many hours a day are there? It hasn't changed at all. Although we come back more into a day, and we do more in the day, we do less for ourselves in a day. And one of the themes here, Neil, to get a little heavy-handed, is what Joseph Pieper talked about in the Leisure, the basis of culture. Without leisure, there is no solitude. Without solitude, there is no examination. Without examination, we simply become and only become our jobs. Now, I've written a book on becoming our jobs. Nothing wrong with that mark of identity, but we've got to be more than our jobs or there's nothing to us.
Todd, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's go now to Derek, and Derek's with us from Ashland, Oregon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm out in the garden, and you know, that's one way that I can be lazy, even though I'm being physical.
Right.
There's a real relaxation mentally.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And certainly hiking does the same, that interaction with nature. I'm an environmental activist now, so I don't get a break like I used to. I used to be a seasonal forest worker, and when I was in college, I encountered a couple of pieces that defend idleness, and one was in praise of idleness by
Bertrand Russell.
Yeah, and then the other was Idleness in South Africa by J.M. Coetzee.
Yes.
And if you wanted to speak to those, that would be great. And let's see, I had another thought.
Well, my thought, Derek, was
Go
that,
ahead.
You know, obviously if you're a farmer, gardening then is not leisure time for you.
That's true, I suppose. I don't know, though. Maybe it is in a way, because there is that. Maybe it's the natural aspect that reduces the tension.
Right. He may be in this wonderful position of being that top 10% of the working population which loves their work and finds their work so absorbing that they would do it even for no thing. But even in that, I think George C. Scott was right. You can't do two matinees and a supper show 7 days a week and bring anything fresh to the performance. You'll wind up with Yul Brynner, whom I actually saw in the last performance, saying et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for the 5,555th time, and he was walking through it, although, God forbid, horribly, the man was dying at the time. But he needed that. So I think what you have to remember in any job is doing too much of anything always contributes against the job. For example, the OSHA has just required that doctors not work more than 75 hours a week. And if you have ever been in an automobile accident, it's 11 o'clock at night, and you've had spinal damage, do you want the neurosurgeon that's been on for 22 hours to be doing that surgery? Or do you want the guy just coming in off shift? So,
What about that just as Americans? I know the French have a reduced work week, and
absolutely.
There is a campaign to go to it.
Right.
32-hour
right.
work week, something like that.
Right.
I'm all for that, that mandated time, and then you can choose to do what you want with it, but I'll certainly take idleness.
Absolutely. 35 hours a week. Of course, they've had certain economic problems with it, but it can be done. Joe Robinson, formerly of Escape magazine, gathered about 50,000 plus signatures for his campaign of 3 mandated weeks a year of vacation and 5 after 3 years. I want to sign up for. I'm from Chicago, so I'm willing to sign that petition again and again and again and again.
It's a good start.
You bet.
Okay,
thanks.
Derek. Thanks very much. We're speaking with Al Genie about his new book, The Importance of Being Lazy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller, Mary Lynn, who's with us from St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
What an interesting subject. It's something I've been working on, doing nothing. I broke the television habit about a year ago, and it is absolutely amazing to me how much more creative my mind has been in that, letting go of that and spending time doing other things.
Now, I want to be careful. I want to, and by the way, of course, the yearbook up at St. Cloud is Cumulus. I've always wanted to say that. But nevertheless, I want to suggest that doing nothing is something. I mean, Anne Quinlan is quite right. Doing nothing is extending oneself beyond the usual. And everyone puts down television. I, too, watch television. We all watch television. The point is to watch television acutely, not to have it on for 7.8 hours a day, which is the national average, and have it as background. I think if you're going to watch TV, watch it, then turn it off and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's being fully present in what we're doing when we're not at work is really what leisure is about, doing something we love. Here's a wonderful argument for a leisure day, making a meal for people you love. Is there a better way to spend time sometimes?
I don't know. Here's a suggestion we had from Elise, and I'm not going to pretend to pronounce her last name, in Bend, Oregon. The way I force myself to do nothing is to sit down and knit. It allows me to stop moving, sit still, and reflect on the things going on in my life, or simply listen to music and at the same time keep my hands busy. The bonus is making a wonderful knit item for a friend or even myself. Mary Lynn, what do you do when you do nothing?
Well, I wish I did something constructive like knit. Actually, what I found to be very relaxing for me, I have a handheld video game, as crazy as that sounds, but while I'm playing that, my mind can just work on other things that it needs to work on. As I said, I've become much more creative in my
right.
free time.
And I think we've got to look at the root word for vacation, which vacare in Latin means to get out of. And so anything that gets us out of and allows us to think in different ways is part of leisure. It's part of not always being on.
Exactly. Fishing can do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Weeding in the garden, same
Absolutely.
Thing. Yep.
Okay.
Love it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an email we got from Timothy. My most recent innovation in leisure, loitering.
Mm.
Well, there's something to aspire to.
I'm not sure that's either ethical or legal, but I'll have to think about that one a bit.
All right. Let's go with Tracy, who joins us on the line from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to call and say that while I love to cook meals, as was just suggested, for loved ones and family members, and I love to garden, for the last year, I've been addicted to Will Shortz's crossword puzzles in the New York Times.
Absolutely.
I don't know why I came to them so late, but I actually sit down then and don't do anything except the crossword puzzle.
And the very purpose of that puzzle is no thing except answering that puzzle and stretching yourself and forcing yourself to think of synonyms and metaphors, et cetera, et cetera. It's a perfect example of what we mean by leisure. I think it's also important to recognize that it can be almost anything. C.K. Chesterton himself cut out little dolls and did dramatic scenes with them. Churchill built walls and cottages on his estate in the middle of World War II in order to find escape, to find leisure. And in fact, I want to suggest to you that anybody in a position of power needs more time away. Think of what the most glaring scandal of the Bush administration was in the first year before 9/11. Do you remember? Is what he took a month off, and the papers were outraged. He was in the office less than 6 months, and he took a month's vacation. How could he? Well, remember Jimmy Carter? He never left his desk, and I think inflation was 26%.
Well, I'm not sure that the one equates exactly
not
with
entirely,
the other. But,
not entirely.
All right, Tracy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you found, by the way, that you're spending, you get to focus on your leisure time a little bit longer on Saturday than you do on Monday.
Absolutely, Saturday and Sunday, because we don't get our puzzle until Sunday.
Okay, thanks very much. Let's go to Lori, who's with us from Los Angeles.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm actually staying at home raising children right now, and I find I have a lot of time in between naps and when my toddler is playing and when my infant is resting. So actually, one thing that I do when I'm trying to get them down for a nap is I'll put them in the car if they're having a hard time, and I'll listen to NPR. I actually do that.
There's a 12-step program for that now.
And I also read the paper in the mornings while my infant is napping and my toddler is busy with playing in her room and whatnot. When you're raising children and they're young, before they're in preschool, there's a lot of time you find you have a lot of time on your hands.
Well, Lori, I'm afraid we don't. We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Appreciate your phone call. And Al Genie, Very good of you to be here with us today.
Well, I've been working all day. What can I tell you? I want to get home and relax.
Al Jeaney is the author of The Importance of Being Lazy in Praise of Play, Leisure, and Vacations. We spoke with him from WBEZ in Chicago. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.
Always be here. You'll wish that summer could always be here. You'll wish that summer.